Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Gay Clark on caring for loved ones with dementia.
You know, people talk about death being the subject people don't want to talk about and deny, but I really think dementia is a far greater denial. You know, we have a lot of folks who grow old and have some form of mental decline, and we don't prepare for it like a likelihood. We pretend it's not going to happen at all.
Gay Clark, next. While caring for a person with dementia can be very challenging, nurse case manager Gay Clark wants to equip people with some important information to do that work well, to God's glory. Spencer Dahlke talks with her about her piece, Eight Things Caregivers Should Know About Dementia.
You are a nurse case manager?
I am actually a newly retired nurse case manager.
Very good.
And I was doing case management for approximately 10 years total before I retired. And a lot of people don't know what a nurse case manager is or does. What a nurse case manager does is they are following a patient through the hospital continuum and making sure when they are discharged that they have a safe discharge, that they have all the equipment they need. And if they need to go to rehab or if they're profoundly changed to where going home is not feasible, then helping families find a suitable place for their loved one to be. There's a whole lot in between that that we also do, helping people deal with end-of-life concerns as well. But we kind of walk a patient through from day one how to be discharged safely and do well at home or wherever they wound up being.
To the point of asking you a little bit about why you thought to write this piece for the Gospel Coalition, how does your day-to-day work with patients and families shape these eight things that you highlight?
Well, that was part of my motivation for writing it. My father recently passed away, but they had dementia. My mother has Alzheimer's and my father had a stroke, and those symptoms and those residuals affected his brain, his mentation. But I joined in the process of helping care for them. I joined some Facebook groups on dementia just to get some crowdsourcing information from people who are living in the trenches, taking care of mom and dad or Aunt Nona, how to do that well. And I found there was a lot of misinformation out there being shared as facts. And when you look at a lot of Christian publications, and kudos to you, radio folks, you know, people talk about death being the subject people don't want to talk about and deny. But I really think dementia is a far greater denial. You know, we have a lot of folks who grow old and have some form of mental decline, and we don't prepare for it like a likelihood. We pretend it's not going to happen at all. And a lot of your older folks get into a situation where they never dreamed or never able to see themselves as one who couldn't mow their own lawn or vacuum their own house and the like, let alone that they would have some mental declines that affected them. They never anticipated that. And then that makes it that much harder to take care of these folks. And then there's a range of circumstances and situations. You know, I have read and heard of folks who take caring for mom and dad as a great privilege and an honor, which it is. But other people have completely different circumstances where their parents were not great parents. They're just trying to do the right thing. Maybe mom was downright abusive and dementia made that worse. So there's all kinds of circumstances people find themselves in, and there's just not a lot being said about aging and the aging process. And there's certainly very little said about practical matters like getting a power of attorney and the like.
What sort of misinformation is out there? What are we being fed?
Well, a common one that I hear at the hospital is get a patient in and they're showing some Alzheimer's or some kind of dementia decline. And then a family member says, I can't take him home. I can't take care of him. And it may be because they have to work. I'm not trying to say that there's not legitimate concerns there. But I hear commonly, I know there's some agency out there or some group out there that will pay the expenses to take care of mom and dad. And there really isn't. folks. Really, Medicare does not pay for your hospitalization or for memory care or nursing home care. They don't. Medicaid, which is a state-run thing, will pay for it in some circumstances, but it varies from state to state what the rules are. There's an income limit, so you have to be below a certain income to qualify for Medicaid. And often Medicaid will look back 5 years or more before you can qualify. So you apply for Medicaid and you, what we call, spend down mom and dad's resources so they financially are eligible for Medicaid. They've got to wait 5 years from that point before they're even accepted in many states. That's probably one of the biggest misconceptions we have about that.
You write a little bit for this article in the Gospel Coalition about like these eight things. And I guess to this point, you write about proactive planning.
Sure.
What do you think that looks like? Yeah. For these families that just receive a dementia diagnosis?
Well, I'll go you one better. I'm 62 and I have assumed I'm going to get dementia. If I do not, praise the Lord that he spared me from that. But I am making some plans as if it's going to happen. Now, why am I doing it? How am I approaching it like that? Because I'm not going to wake up one day and say, oh, I've got dementia. I need to make some plans. I won't know I have dementia. The vast majority of folks that have Alzheimer's, some folks, if they're diagnosed super early, would know. But a lot of us don't. My mother has end-stage Alzheimer's, and she has no idea that she's got that. Everybody else is the problem. So I'm making, what do those plans look like? So again, you're making plans. That means two things really in front and center are getting a medical power of attorney. That is a piece of paper that someone can speak for you in the event that you're not able to speak for yourself. It's not just in case you get dementia. You could be unconscious from a car accident or something like that, and you need someone to be able to make those decisions for you. That doesn't have to be your spouse. In fact, I would recommend it not be your spouse, because if they're anywhere close to your age, they may have the same difficulty you are. So ideally, it should be a child, or it could be a very good friend, but it needs to be somebody who will, you know, confidently that will follow your wishes in the event that you have Alzheimer's. So that's a very key one. The second one would be a financial power of attorney. That basically gives someone permission to access your funds, your checkbook, and that kind of thing in the case that you're not able to. One of the things that would be a whole nother article I could get into is how vulnerable aging folks are to scammers. If you don't have those two documents in place, it's very difficult sometimes for an adult child to intervene and stop the financial abuse. There are scams out there where my dad called me one day out of the blue and said, well, how's Nathan? And that's my son. I said, he's fine. And he said, what, you know, is he out of the hospital yet? And then I realized immediately what had happened is someone called him late at night claiming to be Nathan, saying he really, really needed some money. And my dad gave him some money. That kind of thing happens all the time. If you don't have access to their accounts, it can be very difficult to help them. My dad also believed that he'd won Publishers Clearing House several times. Someone called him and said he had won, and they needed to meet him at the parking lot of Walmart so he could pay the taxes on the winnings. And, you know, we both smile and go, oh, come on. But got to remember, aging people are vulnerable. It took a lot for me to have to intervene so that he couldn't be taken advantage of.
I really hate that. That's kind of really scummy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Power of attorney needs to be also, you know, this is a trust thing, effective immediately. Meaning right now, my daughter has my financial power of attorney. Right now, she could call the bank, present that documentation and say, I need to be the one in charge of her funds. She could do that right now. The reason why you make it immediately, again, you're not going to wake up and say, you know, I'm really making some bad decisions. I must have dementia and I probably need to turn this over. You know, you're not going to, it's going to take you by surprise. I'm a nurse and it's going to take me by surprise should the Lord allow me to have dementia. Having it effective immediately and putting that power of attorney in the hands of someone you trust completely is essential.
Well, my guest today is Gay Clark. She's a nurse case manager for Park Ridge Health Systems, or former, and the author of 8 Things Caregivers Should Know About Dementia with the Gospel Coalition. This might be a bit of a stupid question because I'm kind of an ignorant young guy. But what does power attorney look like for families that are preparing this? Do you see families sometimes overlooking parts of this process that cause trouble later?
You know, if I have a dear friend whose dad had some dementia, but he also had some sort of mental illness going on, and he was making horrific, horrific decisions. There's a difference between, there's two kinds of ways you can intervene. One is the traditional power of attorney, and the other one is what we call a conservatorship. It's much more difficult to get a conservatorship, and that is a more encompassing thing where you're really, really in charge of things. And this man would go to the bank, want all his money emptied out so he could give it to this other person who was scamming him. And the bank kind of struggled with the whole power of attorney things that wound up getting the conservatorship, which is far more reaching. But it can be a very, very long process to get the conservatorship. But if you have a power of attorney for finances in place with somebody you completely trust, they are aware of who they need to talk to at your bank. Maybe even before things become a necessary thing, you share things in your account, have discussions. It's real important that we have discussions about this before there's a need to. I have a friend that's son is just recently out of college, and he actually called his parents up and said, "We need to have this conversation this weekend." Kudos to him. While everybody's fine and everybody's, you know, with it, to be clear about what mom and dad want and when and under what circumstances is very helpful to a adult child who is struggling with, should I intervene now? Is this a good idea? Etc. To know those things up front.
Kind of tied in with the whole idea of financial care for those with dementia. You mentioned that sometimes we could be blindsided by the cost for nursing home care. Tell us about that a little bit. Sure.
Well, you know, nursing home care is, again, varies from state to state. It can be upwards to $8,000-$9,000 a month for a decent memory care facility, and even more for nursing homes. So there's several stages of long-term care. There's what we call assisted living, and these are folks who are basically with it. Sometimes they still drive, but they know they need a little help. They need someone to come in and do the cleaning, and they're not really great cooking for themselves, so they go to a facility that has assisted living, and that's exactly what it is. They assist folks in some of the tasks that they're not able to do. But for the most part, these folks do not have signs of dementia or clear thinking. I joked with my brother and I toured one of these facilities years ago, and they were cooking some kind of steak dinner, and the aroma was just overwhelming in positive light. My brother whispered to me and said, "I wonder how young you can be to get in here," you know, because the food smelled absolutely wonderful. So they're not like some drab, horrible existence. A lot of people who make that decision ahead of time will sell their house as part of the way they fund that. And then the next step would be memory care. And memory care is for those people that have some signs of dementia. They've lost the ability, say, to take medications safely on their own, would wander outside and not be able to come back because they don't know where they live. Those kind of folks would live in a memory care, but they're usually able-bodied, walking with some moderate to mild assistance. And then there's nursing home care. And those are folks that are a lot more physically and mentally infirm. So as you might guess, each of those stages are increasing in cost as far as expenses. Again, it varies from facility to facility. It varies from state to state how much that will run you.
Do you think there is something to be said for, I mean, I've heard time and again, especially as Christians, that we're called to like care for the elderly, especially our family members. You write a little bit about too, about like, you know, dementia is a marathon. It takes a lot of patience and a lot of wisdom. Pros and cons, like weigh the costs and benefits, I suppose, of assisted living versus just have the sick and infirm, like family members living with us, maybe have a nurse come by house.
I think that's a really, it's kind of like a good metaphor for, it's kind of like when you school choice, you know, do I take Junior to the Christian school or do I put him in the public school with a lot of support and that kind of thing? You're kind of trying to, everybody's situation can be slightly different. So one person may vow to take care of mom at home and that's what they're going to do. And another person needs them at a facility. So you have to discern why. Now, a good nurse case manager can walk you through helping you make that decision. For example, one indicator that mom or dad may need to go to a facility is if they start wandering in the middle of the night. They go outside, go down the street, their nightgown is 30 degrees outside, which can happen. Ask me how I know. That's a safety thing that you may not be able to prevent unless you put him or her somewhere where there are people awake and watching all night long. You're not going to be able to do that at home. Other people decide, well, I'm going to take care of mama at home. They still may have to have people come in and help them. They're going to need what we call respite care, where they take a break for a week. I mentioned in the article, my brother and I switched off. He was primary caregiver, hands-on caregiver for mom and dad because he lived near them. But a couple of weeks a year, I would make a point of going up there so he could get away and do something fun that didn't involve taking care of my parents. And so we did that for a number of years. When I first suggested you're going to need me to come up for a week or two, I'll be fine. And I think maybe a year into it, he recognized, yeah, Gay knew what she was talking about there. So, but everybody's circumstance looks a little different. You just have to maybe have a lot of conversations with a lot of people. You got to have conversations with your folks. You got to have conversations with their physician. Sometimes allied health professionals are not people you would ignore either. Like a really solid, good physical therapist or occupational therapist or speech therapist, if your family member has any of those people in their lives, can help a great deal. Like I remember early on, we were trying to figure out if my dad truly has dementia or whether we were losing our minds. My physical therapist came in to work with my mom, and you could tell by the look on her face, she was kind of like, I wonder about dad now. So my mom had asked for something to eat. So she said, hey, Mr. Bishop, would you like to go in the kitchen and get your wife a sandwich? He came back with a hamburger. It was a raw hamburger on a bun and gave it to my mom. And she said, now you think that's ready for her to eat? And he said, that's what's in the refrigerator. And, you know, I remember looking at my brother like, yep, we officially have somebody with dementia. And kudos to her for being so clever. She didn't have to shame my dad. Of course, my dad never acknowledged his deficit, but at least we knew we were no longer able to rely comfortably on my dad to look after my mom. So it can look differently for different people as far as how you go about determining where your family member is and what kind of help they need. And sometimes you're just flat limited. There are a lot of people that have no option but to stay home and take care of mama because they don't have any funds for her to go anywhere or any funds to have people come in. And frankly, that's where the body of Christ could be an enormous help. My parents went to a very large church and they were very faithful to send both my parents a card or two once a week, but we never saw a visit, not once. I'm not blaming them, but most churches are in that ballpark of erring on neglecting their aging population that's not able to get out and see people. Yes, cards are wonderful, but they don't replace human contact.
The encouraging thing that you, you know, close your article with is that dementia, that folks with dementia can still know Christ and God can still use them. To that last point of visiting them, how would you recommend the church? Because it's hard to interact with people with dementia, you know.
Sure.
What do we do with that? How do we minister well to them?
Well, first of all, educate yourself about dementia. I mentioned in the article a couple of resources. Be the Light Care resource is a wonderful resource for that very thing, as far as giving you some suggestions of how to interact with someone with dementia. And yes, they may not remember tomorrow that you came by yesterday, but they will have the joy of that very moment. And sometimes all you need is a physical presence. You don't have to make astoundingly pleasant conversation, particularly if it's a person who's staying at home that you're visiting. You're probably going to minister to the person taking care of mom or dad just as much as you are the folk with dementia. So your physical presence is the most important, essential thing. And then the other thing would be just to maybe share something from the scriptures that you find encouraging. It doesn't have to be a big, huge sermonette. In fact, I would encourage you to keep those visits short, but more frequent if you could. Again, you're engaging not just the person with dementia, but also their caregiver. You might call the caregiver up and say, hey, I'm thinking your mom would really enjoy a visit from us at the church. Can you give us some ideas how that visit should go and what we can do to really be an encouragement to you and her? I think there'd be a number of caregivers that would just fall out if somebody actually called them and said, tell me how to help you guys. Tell me how I can encourage you guys. Educate yourself. Everybody's situation is a little different. So that's all the more reason why to call the expert, which is the person who is at their bedside caring for them.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to today's guest, retired nurse case manager Gay Clark. If you'd like to read her piece, 8 Things Caregivers Should Know About Dementia, go to thegospelcoalition.org. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Sam Rejoy on Child Evangelism Fellowship's ongoing work in the Middle East, despite recent conflict.
It is a tough region, and we hear so many stories of these kind of persecution that is happening. And yet, CEF continues to operate, and CEF workers face these challenges to continue to share the gospel to boys and girls.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.